reading through the book of Job, and tonight we want to read Job chapter 24. Job chapter 24. You'll find it, if you have a church Bible, on page 527. Job chapter 24. Why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? Why must those who know Him look in vain for such days? Men move boundary stones. They pasture flocks they have stolen. They drive away the orphan's donkey and take the widow's ox in pledge. They trust the needy from the path and force all the poor of the land into hiding. Like wild donkeys in the desert, the poor go about their labor of foraging food. The wasteland provides food for their children. They gather fodder in the fields and glean in the vineyards of the wicked. Lacking clothes, they spend the night naked. They have nothing to cover themselves in the cold. They are drenched by mountain rains and hug the rocks for lack of shelter. The fatherless child is snatched from the breast. The infant of the poor is seized for a debt. Lacking clothes, they go about naked. They carry the sheaves, but still go hungry. They crush olives among the terraces. They tread the wine presses, yet suffer thirst. The groans of the dying rise from the city, and the souls of the wounded cry out for help. But God charges no one with wrongdoing. There are those who rebel against the light, who do not know its ways or stay in its paths. When daylight is gone, the murderer rises up and kills the poor and needy. In the night he steals forth like a thief. The eye of the adulterer watches for dusk. He thinks, "No one will see me," and he keeps his face concealed. In the dark, men break into houses, but by day they shut themselves in. They want nothing to do with the light. For all of them, deep darkness is their mourning. They make friends with the terrors of darkness. Yet they are a foam on the surface of the water. Their portion of the land is cursed, so that no one goes to the vineyards. As heat and drought snatch away the melted snow, so the grave snatches away those who have sinned. The womb forgets them. The worm feasts on them. Evil men are no longer remembered, but are broken like a tree. They prey on the barren and childless woman, and to the widow show no kindness. But God drags away the mighty by His power. Though they have become established, they have no assurance of life. He may let them rest in a feeling of security, but His eyes are on their ways. For a little while they are exalted, and then they are gone. They are brought low and gathered up like all others. They are cut off like ears of corn. If this is not so, who can prove me false and reduce my words to nothing? And ending reading there at verse 25. This is the remainder of Job's third response to the counsel of Eliphaz. I'm sure most people here this evening will remember the Oma bombing. A terrible, terrible event during the course of the troubles in this province, when a terrorist bomb killed 31 people, including two unborn children, and injured more than 200 others, some of them, and many of them indeed, having life-changing injuries to deal with. And as you may be aware, if you followed the story, there have been many attempts over the years since that bomb occurred to bring the perpetrators of that terrible terrorist act to justice in the criminal courts. There's been more than one attempt. The best efforts of the prosecutors and the police have been put into trying to bring these wicked men to justice. And yet, although there was a there was a successful outcome in a civil court, there has been no successful criminal conviction against the wicked men who took away so many lives, caused so much hurt and agony to so many, many people in Omagh and beyond. How hard it must be. Try and for a moment, I know it's not possible, but try for a moment to imagine that you're a relative of some of the victims of the Omagh bombing. You're a relative. And you've thought more than once, justice is going to be done. These men will be, or maybe women, will be called to account. The criminal justice system will call them to account. And yet, over and over again it seems, they've managed to get away with it. How hard it must be to deal with that sense of injustice, the failure to bring these wicked men to account. And of course, that's only one example. Our world is full of examples of wicked people who have done the worst of things and they've got away with it. Just mention one other on a very large scale, one of the worst cases of atrocity ever carried out. It was under the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia in the late 1970s. And under the oppressive regime of the Khmer Rouge, it's estimated that up to 1 million people were put to death. And yet the officials in that government, that oppressive government, have never been brought before a court of international justice to give account of their crimes. Over and over again in our fallen world, there are so many examples of injustice. And the first point we want to notice here in Job's speech is, and this is, I think, the major theme of it, the way it begins, and it's reiterated in verse 12. Job is perplexed by a lack of judgment upon the wicked. He has said this before, but now he says it in some detail. He spells out in some detail what is so perplexing about the wicked not being brought to justice. Look at verse 1 here. That's how it begins. That's the opening theme of the chapter. Why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? And then speaking of those who are godly, why must those who know him, the godly ones, why must those who know him look in vain for such days? They look in vain. The day of justice doesn't seem to be coming. There's no sign of it. And then after going through some examples of oppression, if you look down at verse 12, you'll see that the same note is struck in verse 12 at the very end of it. But God charges no one with wrongdoing. Job is perplexed by this, as many, of course, are perplexed by the prevalence of injustice in our world. I think it was William Ewart Gladstone who first expressed the famous saying, justice delayed is justice denied. Justice delayed is justice denied. And certainly that is often the case in our human justice system. But Job is saying even more than that here. It's not just that the justice is delayed, but there's no sign at all of it coming. When's it going to come? What day has been set for it? What time has been set for it? Why must the godly and the just look in vain for it to come? And therefore he is deeply, deeply perplexed. And there are plenty of other examples in the Bible of godly men expressing such perplexity at delays, seeming delays in the judgment of the wicked. We sang from Psalm 6, the psalmist said, "My soul is also troubled sore, but you, Lord, how long will you take? How long?" Isn't that an agonizing cry? How long, Lord, will you take to deal with the wicked? Psalm 13 we'll be singing at the end of our worship service. The psalmist in a very personal way says, "How long, triumphant over me, will be my enemy? How long, O Lord, will you allow my enemy to be triumphant over me?" And even in the book of Revelation, while it might be wrong to call it perplexity, there's certainly a longing for the final judgment of God to be brought into effect among those who have been slain for the sake of the gospel, among those who have been terribly persecuted by wicked men because they've been believers. Revelation 6, verse 10, we see this longing. They called out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood?" So I'm sure here this evening, there have been plenty of times in your experience when you've experienced that kind of perplexity. How long? How long before wickedness is judged? You can identify, I think, at some level anyway, with the thoughts of feelings and feelings that Job expresses in this chapter. And you can be sure of this, be prepared for this. You will come across people, plenty of people in our world, who because of the seeming lack of justice in our world will say, "Well, there cannot be a just God. Where is the God of justice that we can believe in?" You will encounter people, and that will be their attitude. They'll be embittered. They'll be angry. They may even be vengeful in the face of injustice. Job is perplexed by a lack of judgment upon the wicked. He begins the chapter on this note, and he reiterates it in verse 12 when he says, "But God charges no one with wrongdoing." We can understand his perplexity further if we look at the second point under verses 2 to 12. Job is perplexed by the extent, by the intensity, by the degree of injustice in the world. Verses 2 to 12. He begins by pointing out the serious injustice caused by moving boundary stones and stealing flocks. Now, you may not be able to relate to this immediately. You might wonder, well, what's wrong with moving a stone? But you see, boundary stones were used in these days to mark out a person's property, their rightful possession, their farm, if you like. The boundary stones were set there to mark the land. They were maybe a crude equivalent of the kind of title deeds we have today with ordnance survey maps spelling out, this is the border of your possession. This is what you're entitled to. This is your just entitlement. But here in these days long ago, wicked men, greedy men would move boundary stones in order to get their hands on more land, and often especially deprive the weak and the vulnerable of the land that was theirs. No wonder Deuteronomy 27 verse 17 says, "Cursed is the man who moves his neighbor's boundary stone." Stealing, taking advantage of his neighbor, stealing the land and stealing the flocks associated with it. Verse 2. But there's more oppression than that and more injustice than that. Very vividly, in verses 3 to 4, look at verses 3 and 4. Job spells out what he sees around him of the oppression of the weak and the vulnerable, the weakest and the most vulnerable. Reference again to the orphans who are very vulnerable, having no father, mother to protect them. Verse 3. They drive away the orphan's donkey. The widow, they take the widow's ox in pledge. And then the poor in general, they oppress them. They thrust the needy from the path and force all the poor of the land into hiding. Here are the rich and the powerful in the land, and they're oppressing the weak and the poor and the vulnerable. That happens in so many countries of our world still to this very day. The oppression of the weak is perplexing to Job. Likewise, verses 5 to 11, then the consequent hardships that are suffered, that have to be put up with by those who have been so oppressed. These are spelt out very, very vividly. They lack food. They lack food. Look at these verses 5 to 11. Look where they have to go to look for food. Verse 5, they're like wild donkeys in the desert. They go about their labor foraging food. The wasteland provides food for their children. They gather fodder in the fields and glean in the vineyards of the wicked. They're lacking clothing. It's a cold night tonight, isn't it? It's a cold night here. And it'd be a terrible thing to be exposed to the cold without any warm clothing. Most of us, I'm sure, most of you have good warm overcoats, fleeces, heat in your homes. But here are people who are so, so oppressed. They don't have clothes to keep them warm amidst the cold. Verse 7, lacking clothes, they spend the night naked. They have nothing to cover themselves in the clothes. They are drenched by mountain rains and hug the rocks for lack of shelter. They have no shelter. And even they have very little water. Even though they're given work, they're not given enough water to drink by their greedy employers. Not given enough food and not given enough water. Verse 11. They crush olives among the terraces. They tread the wine presses, yet suffer thirst. And most poignantly of all, most heart-rending of all, surely, are these strong, strong words of verse 12. Look what the first part of verse 12 says. The groans of the dying rise from the city, and the souls of the wounded cry out for help. Might make you think of the city of Aleppo tonight, where awful war is raging and people are indeed groaning as they die. What hardships are suffered still by the poor, even in our modern world. You and I survey the world. I'm sure the words of Robbie Burns come to mind. I've quoted them here. It's from his poem, The Man Was Made to Mourn. Robbie Burns wrote many different types of poetry, some wonderful love poetry, some kind of, if you like, superstitious kind of poetry. He also wrote sad, sad poetry. And this is a famous line from this poem. Man's inhumanity to man makes countless thousands mourn. That was true way back in Job's time. That was true in the time of Robbie Burns in Scotland, in the world in which he lived. And it's just as true tonight. Look out in our world. Don't you see it? Man's inhumanity to man makes countless thousands mourn. And Job is perplexed by the extent, by the degree of suffering and injustice in the world. I think especially striking those words of verse 12. The groans of the dying rise from the city, and the souls of the wounded cry out for help. Another thing that perplexes Job, another aspect of this third thing here. Yes, there shouldn't be an apostrophe or an S there, obviously. I forgot to take out that. Job is perplexed by how the wicked take advantage of the darkness. He's perplexed by how the wicked take advantage of the darkness. Verses 13 to 17. The wickedness is carried out under the cover of darkness. These people, they're not really interested in the light. They're not people of the light. They rebel against the light. And that verse 17 emphasizes that as well. They're people of the night. They're people who wait for the darkness to come so they can carry out their crimes against humanity, so they can carry out injustice. Three particular groups of people are mentioned here who operate by night and inflict suffering and loss upon their neighbors. Three startling examples of terrible crime. They're very familiar to us. Verse 14. Here's one group that uses the night to carry out their terrible crime. The murderers. The murderers. Look at verse 14 where that is referred to. When daylight is gone, the murderer rises up and kills the poor and the needy. In the night he steals forth like a thief to murder. to break one of the great commandments of God, thou shalt not kill, to undermine the precious sanctity of human life. A terrible, terrible crime. And how many murderers are not about and around in our world, even this very night? How many people are not intent on murder in various different parts of our world still this very night? And will go out under the cover of darkness to kill and to slay. There's another group here who take advantage of the darkness and again to break one of God's commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Verse 15, the adulterers also make use of the darkness to carry out their infidelity. Verse 15, the eye of the adulterer watches for dusk. He thinks, no one will see me. And he keeps his face concealed out of shame, perhaps. Maybe not as much shame nowadays as there was then. There's still some shame, but there was a lot of shame in that time of the world. And so they want to go out and conceal themselves as they carry out their infidelity. And another group that operates by night are the burglars who break the commandment, thou shalt not steal. Now, of course, as the police will tell you, I'm sure, the police will tell you many burglaries are opportunistic and many of them are actually carried out in daylight hours when the burglar sees a window that's not been properly closed. Or it amazes you, the number of people who leave their front doors lying open. I've nearly done it on a few occasions, thinking I'd closed it, and happily have gone back to check. And so many burglaries nowadays are opportunistic. But according to the last survey I could find by UK police authorities, do you know what are the most burglaries are committed? Between 12 midnight and 1 a.m. is the most popular time for burglaries. When it's dark. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but do you know what month is the most common for burglaries? Yeah, yes, I think November. Now, I don't want you rushing out now and rushing home. Burglars can strike at any time, and we have to entrust our property and our houses to the care of God and be as wise as we can. But the point being made here is, under the cover of darkness, people take advantage of this so they can carry out their terrible crimes against humanity without being seen or with less chance of being detected. The murderers, the adulterers, and the burglars. And yet, lest we get on our high horse, which is easy for us to do, isn't it true that to your degree, in one way or another, you and I have actually broken all these commandments as well? Have you never had a hateful thought toward your towards someone, toward even a family member, toward a neighbor? Have you ever had a hateful thought toward them? You've broken that commandment. Adultery, have you ever had a lustful thought? How hard it is not to have lustful thoughts in this world where filth is constantly broadcast and set before us. Have you never been dishonest in any way? You and I have all broken these commandments to some degree. I trust by the grace of God we never actually murdered someone. We never actually committed adultery. Or we never actually broken into someone's house and stolen. But we too need forgiveness from a holy God. For we have broken these commandments. But here, these people are taking advantage of the cover of darkness to carry out their terrible schemes. Job is perplexed by how the wicked take advantage of the darkness. Fourthly, Job is convinced that the wicked will be judged eventually. Job is convinced that the wicked will be judged eventually. Look at the last number of verses here, from verse 18 down as far as verse 25. Now, there is an issue of translation in the first portion of these verses, from verse 18 down to verse 20, some commentators say that rather than expressing here confidence, it's actually a cry. It's calling out for God to do this. But I think it's better maybe to take it in line with the remaining verses in the section and see this as an expression of confidence that God will. He will eventually judge the wicked. That they're not going to get away with it forever. Verse 23, first point here. God does see what they are doing. He's not blind to it. Job expresses this confidence. Look at verse 23 here. That's speaking of those who may rest in a feeling of security. And there's many a wicked person who does have that false sense of security. They've gotten away with it. They're never going to be called to account. Job says that God's eyes, the eyes of the mighty God, who is able, according to verse 22, even to drag away the mighty, his eyes are on their ways. He has noticed. He has paid attention. And they will eventually be called to account. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God. Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes, and he is the one to whom we are accountable. God does see. He's not blind to what the wicked are doing. And so, therefore, their apparent security, it's not going to last forever. It is not going to last forever. And there, he says many things about this. I'll just briefly summarize them in four ways. These wicked who seem to be getting away with it, they are like foam on the water. Verse 18. Yet they are foam on the surface of the water. I was trying to get a handle on that picture, and I suppose, you know, foam is not a very substantial thing. It's quite noticeable when it's there, but it doesn't really last. It's not substantial. And the best picture that came to mind to illustrate maybe would be, you know, the fizzy drinks. If you shake up the bottle, there's foam or there are bubbles on top. But let the bottle sit for a while, and the foam, the bubbles, the froth, it soon disappears. It puts on a good show, but it doesn't last. And the wicked people, though they may put on a good show, though they may seem to be triumphing and may seem to be getting away with it, though they may be very complacent, they are just like foam on the water. Another striking picture of their ultimate judgment is found in verse 19. Look at verse 19. As heat and drought snatch away the melted snow, so the grave snatches away those who have sinned. Well, we know all about that. Snow here, especially. It mightn't be as striking if we were up near the North Pole or in some of the colder regions. But the snow, as our children express so much disappointment at times, it comes and then it goes away very quickly. It puts on a great show, doesn't it? When the snow falls, it whitens the landscape. It's very striking. It's very noticeable. It doesn't take much but a little rise in temperatures. It melts and it's gone eventually. They are like snow that will melt. They will be broken like a tree. Verse 20. Another comparison there. Evil men are no longer remembered, but are broken like a tree. And the idea here may be, the commentator suggests, a tree that is flourishing, but then suddenly it's struck down by lightning and broken and ruined. And then in verse 24, though exalted for a little while, that's important, a little while, they will be cut off like heads of grain or heads of corn. They are cut off like ears of corn. Here's a field, and it's full of a good crop. And there's plenty of grain on the stalks. Along suddenly comes a storm, and it blows the heads of the corn. It blows the grain off the stalks. Suddenly, despite the great show that had been made in that field prior to that. So Job does say, toward the end of this chapter, amidst all his perplexity, he does have some degree of conviction here that the wicked will eventually be judged. I'm sure, as I've said earlier, you and I do wrestle with this issue of wickedness and evil seeming to keep on triumphing. But haven't you and I much more reason for confidence that God will eventually bring judgment, that he will right all wrongs, that he will call all wicked men to account, even those who have managed to escape from human justice. They will be called to account. Why can we have such confidence? Well, in the New Testament and other places in the Word of God, Job wouldn't have had access to these verses. Especially the verse that came to mind was Acts 17, verse 31, where Paul is proclaiming the gospel. And he says of God, "For he has set a day. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man," that is Jesus Christ, "he has appointed." Do you see how that is relevant here? Notice how Job is perplexed at the beginning of Job chapter 24. Why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? Why doesn't he do it? And Paul is able to proclaim, and we need to believe, that the Lord has set a day that will come, a day that he has appointed, and in that day he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. May you and I be comforted and reassured by that conviction, even when we're perplexed by all the injustice and all the inhumanity that still prevails in our world today. May we be able to point people who are perplexed by this to the fact that there is a judge, and the day will come when all wrongs will be put right and all injustice will be called to account. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. Amen.